Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and we're continuing a look on today's show at what happened in the recently concluded legislative sessions on both sides of the river. Last week, as you know, I had on Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley, a Republican, who gave that party's view of what happened. And this week, I'm very happy to have on a Democratic state legislator from Council Bluffs, who has a very unique background and somebody you need to know if you're not aware of right now. His name's Josh Turek. He's serving his second term in the Iowa legislature, and he's a four-time Paralympian, two-time Olympic basketball champion, and is the first permanently disabled member of the Iowa legislature. As somebody who comes from a family with disabled members, this issue is near and dear to me, and I'm very proud that somebody like Josh has risen to the level he has. So, Josh, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, first of all, I'll just kind of tee it up a big picture question on how you view how the legislature went. The Democrats, of course, are in the minority. Doesn't mean things still can't be done cooperatively, but what's your 40,000-mile, I guess, take on how the legislature session went?
Trying not to be an overt tribalist with things, and yeah, I try to be bipartisan, and I think I've been one of our most bipartisan members. It certainly isn't easy being in the minority. And there are a variety of areas that certainly that I think that the state is going the wrong way. In truth, I say it oftentimes, we're the only state that hasn't grown or doubled in size over the last 100 years. We are basically now dead last in economic growth. We're 49th in bridges. We're dead last in PMAC beds. 31 nursing homes that have closed in this state over the last 5 years. I think particularly for some of the areas that I care the very most about, which would be health and human services and the most vulnerable in the society, whether that's the elderly or the disabled or those without enough, I feel us going far too often in the wrong direction, not the right direction. And I think that when you start to look at things like civil rights and, you know, unfortunately, now Iowa has the stain of being the only state to remove a protected class from the state civil rights code. And you look at what we're doing on women's rights and workers' rights and child labor and on far too many of these areas. I think that we're moving in the wrong direction.
Were there some things, and I'm sure, again, being a member of the Democratic Party in the minority, it is hard, as you said. The Republicans in Illinois say the same thing. But there are opportunities for working together, and there were some things I know you've noted that you were able to compromise on. One of them is this bill on pharmacies, which is very interesting for rural areas, and I'd like you to talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm gonna talk about some other things too, but I'll certainly start there. I was genuinely happy to see us get a PBM, which is pharmacy benefit management reform done. This was something that was really, really hurting our rural pharmacies and was essentially operating as just a strongman middleman, which was forcing pharmacies oftentimes to provide medication to individuals, oftentimes below or what they could even get in terms of reimbursement. It was ruining the mom and pop pharmacies, particularly in rural areas, and it's actually driving up pharmaceutical costs for the end user, for the provider. And for me, one of the things that I have talked the most about and that I'm the most passionate about is that in a state like Iowa in particular, we need to do all that we can to increase access for healthcare and for pharmaceuticals, but also to do everything we can to drive down the cost for healthcare and pharmaceuticals. We did not do all bad things. You know, one thing that I'm proud of, all politics is local. This year, I was able to get a bill that I had worked all 3 years that I had been working on, which was a boat dock bill. I represent a community of Carter Lake, which is completely within the jurisdiction of Nebraska. And so we ended up with a boat dock regulation that was different from neighbor to neighbor. And we were able to get that to the governor's office and get that signed. That was done in a very, very bipartisan way. So there's still this ability to work together. Additionally, in the area of disability work, I was able to do some work to remove the need for a doctor visit and prior authorizations on wheelchair repair, which was unnecessarily denying people's, you know, you can imagine me, myself without my wheelchair repair, I'm just holed up in my house. And it was an unnecessary burden that was costing people weeks or months without their chair. We're able to do that. I was able to write an amendment that we became a law, which was to protect service dogs because the landlords were trying to crack down on the emotional support animals, which needed to be done. But there's a very clear distinction between what is an emotional support animal and what is a service dog. I was able to write an amendment, which became the bill on getting $1 million into our public lands and our public parks to make it more accessible because it's ours. It should be open to everyone and those that are disabled as well. This session, we were able to increase, largely to a lot of the work that I've done on a bill called Work Without Worry, increasing the income and asset limits for permanent disabled individuals that are on Medicaid, because right now they can only make 250% of the poverty line, enforcing them into poverty, and they can only have assets of $12,000, which is limiting them from ever going on to live a meaningful life. You know, no one should be forced to live in poverty just because of their healthcare situation, because they've lost the genetic lottery. And this year we did move the needle, not nearly enough, but the asset limit for individuals was $12,000 and only $13,000 if you were married. We were able to double that, largely because of the loss of the work and advocacy that myself and other disability advocates we worked very, very hard for that over the last 3 years. And one of the other issues that because of my advocacy and many other disabled advocates is there was a cancerous carcinogen that was in catheters that many of us that are disabled are putting inside our body every single day called DEHP. This was leading to a bladder cancer epidemic. And because of the advocacy that we were able to do, we have had the five largest providers, which essentially have 97% of the market, that have decided to self-regulate and pull out the DEHP out of these intermittent catheters. And now we have 20 million less catheters that are causing cancer for disabled folks. So even though I've been in a trifecta minority for these 3 years, still been able to get some things done on a personal level, which are very, very meaningful, again, to some of the most vulnerable. And I would also say, you know, not only PBM reform, what we ended up doing on land rights to protect landowners against eminent domain being used exclusively for corporate good. Again, getting back to the HHS budget, which I'm the chair on that, so I'm probably the most intimately familiar with that area. We ended up putting $20 million to rebasing towards our nursing homes. That is vitally important. As I mentioned earlier, we have lost 31 nursing homes and skilled nursing facilities in this state over the last 5 years. For the first time, I think, in this century, we gave some additional money to orthopedics. And, that was good. We put $3 million, I think, the first time this century as well, towards reimbursement to Medicaid individuals for dental care and oral care, which is vitally important. You can imagine in my portion of the state, Southwest Iowa, it's basically the same across the entire state. There is not a single provider that is taking Medicaid, largely because of how low those reimbursement rates are. And so for us to be able to put $3 million, and again, not enough, but to be able to have poor children and disabled individuals and elderly people be able to have some level of oral care, It's vitally important. We did some good things. A cell phone ban this year, I thought, was a good thing. We expanded parental leave to adoptive parents. We had some new tools to address human trafficking. We did some things finally on the opioid crisis. That was great. It's not all bad.
I saw where, you mentioned cancer, and I saw where the state, I've read reports of some alarming increases in cancer in Iowa that puts Iowa, I think, the leading state with the highest rate of cancer. And Grassley, Speaker Grassley mentioned something about funding there. Do you think, any ideas on what might be causing that, or you're just going to wait until the research is done?
Well, I think that there is a correlation between our water quality. And I think if you're to look at the cancer maps and where it's happening, I've done a lot of time and research actually on this because of what I was talking about with the bladder cancer, spending a lot of time with the University of Iowa and was speaking to them about the groups or the demographics where they were seeing the highest levels of cancer. And actually, even more than individuals with disabilities that were using catheters, the highest levels that they're seeing are individuals that are working in the rural communities and farmers specifically. And so I think there is a correlation with pesticides and the lack of water quality and water quality sensors. I think that there's a reason why you're having a company like Bayer that is going out there and trying to preemptively stop any class action lawsuits from happening, is because I think that they're aware that there is a correlation to that. And thankfully, finally, because we've got an absolute cancer crisis in this state. We are the only state with a growing cancer rate. We have the second highest rates of cancer behind only Kentucky. And we have the fifth highest rates of pediatric cancer. That should be appalling to all of us. And so for the 3 years that I've been in the legislature, I have run a bill, which was to just put $1 for every Iowan to pediatric cancer research to find out why we are having this. Why in Iowa specifically are we having this issue? And so it would put $3.2 million to the University of Iowa. And that was, it's never been voted for. And this year, finally, the governor in her State of the Union, State of the State address came out and said, we need to make a real war on cancer. And so they agreed to put $1 million towards this. Now, this gets the ball rolling. And I'm grateful that we're finally going to do something in this. But it's not nearly enough. We've got surrounding states like Nebraska that every year put $5.5 million towards this. Texas puts $20 million towards this, significantly more. You're looking at the only state that is in front of us, Kentucky, that really, really cares. And these are other red states that I'm talking about. I'm not talking about blue states. Kentucky that's putting something like $20 million of state appropriation towards this. We need to do more because this is something that touches every single Iowan, and we need to understand more thoroughly, why are we the only state with a growing cancer rate? Why do we have the second highest rates? And that should be a priority of our legislature and of our governor and of our government as a whole.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is state legislator from the 20th District in Council Bluffs. His name's Josh Turek. He's serving his second term in the legislature, and we've been talking a little bit about what happened in the legislature, some things that Josh is disappointed in, but also opportunities where he was able to work on a bipartisan basis to get some things done, and the alarming cancer rate in Iowa and what was done in the session to address that. I know you were just you've been advocating about the Medicaid cuts that are in the federal budget. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit because of your passion about human services in Iowa. What's your message to the legislators on what you see that that's going to do to people in Iowa?
Yeah, actually, after we finished our 23-hour marathon session to sign E die in the legislature, I immediately turned around and I went up to D.C. to get in front of all of our congressional delegation and in front of our two senators to, one, talk about the detriment to the potential $700 billion cuts to Medicaid and to the $300 billion in cuts to SNAP food assistance to the poor and to the elderly, and also to talk about what is being potentially considered with the Office of Management and Budget, where they are talking about making huge cuts to a lot of P&A grants, PAD grants, PAIR grants, and you're looking at $140 different disability organization supports that are looking at losing somewhere between all of their funding and, you know, 25, 50% of their funding. For example, Disability Rights Iowa, they do amazing work for people across the state. We're looking at them losing 65% of their funding. We're looking at Developmental Disabilities Council losing 100% of their funding. I mean, I could go on and on and on. So I went up there to chat with them about that. Some context about Medicaid. We've got over 700,000 Iowans, one in five Iowans that are on Medicaid. This is, again, these are elderly. This is the disabled. These are 40% of the individuals that are on Medicaid in Iowa are poor children. You've got SNAP benefits, food assistance. 90% of the families that are receiving SNAP benefits are families that either have children, an individual with a disability in the family, an elderly person, or a veteran. That is what we're discussing. And we're talking about making cuts to this, to the most vulnerable, basic healthcare, and to a system that is already over leveraged, underfunded, and essentially totally broken. I mean, already in Iowa, this year we had to backfill $200 million shortfall to the Medicaid. As I had already mentioned earlier, 31 nursing homes have already closed. That is largely due to the lack of reimbursement and funding from Medicaid. We've already got a massive direct care worker shortage in the state. The average direct care worker, especially in rural communities, only making $13.50. That is due to Medicaid reimbursement. That leads to about 35% of the direct care workers being on Medicaid themselves. We've got 22,000 Iowans, disabled Iowans, that are on HCBS waiver waitlist. The longest waitlist right now, which is for intellectual disabilities, is 7 years. You can imagine how immoral and unjust that is. Just because you were born with an intellectual or physical disabilities, that you are waiting 7 years for care because we are underfunding our Medicaid already. In one of the areas that I've cared the most about, one of the reasons why I actually got into politics is because I was working for a company and we were assessing and we are providing wheelchairs for the disabled. Since we have privatized our Medicaid system, the denial rate for mobility devices, power wheelchairs, 1,000% increase in denial rate. So we're talking about already something that is completely over leveraged to begin with. And Iowa is particularly vulnerable, far more than many other states, because one, the governor, we've already done this massive HHS restructuring. And additionally, we've already moved away from the institutional model. So we don't have any place to put these people because we've closed our institutions. So what do you do with them? They have to live in a community model at home that requires direct care workers, that requires support, and it's already underfunded. What the budget is looking at beyond just the state of Iowa, you're looking at 14 million people being kicked off of Iowa. $700 billion in cuts, $300 billion from SNAP. It's what is it going to lead to ultimately? It's going to lead to a lack of services. It's going to lead to more difficulty for eligibility. It's going to lead to less providers and less supports, less services. That's ultimately, sadly, what it's going to lead to, again, poor people. And all of this is because we want to reduce the tax burden for the richest Americans, for individuals that make over $500,000. You cannot have a more broken moral compass than that. Cut taxes to the richest Americans, the wealthiest in the country that already has the greatest levels of inequality and wealth divide. We're going to cut taxes on these individuals to the tune of $3 trillion, and we're going to pay for it off of the backs of poor children and disabled and elderly. It's immoral.
Yeah, I want to, I guess, turn to the political ramifications of this. And the reason is because you are from a working class district in Council Bluffs. And as you know, I mean, we're in the midst of a political transformation. I think it's fair to say we're working class folks are trending more Republican. And that's the traditional base of the Democratic Party going back to the FDR coalition. You know, again, you represent a working class district. It just seems like, you know, for everything you said, and the Medicaid cuts are going to hurt Iowa. There's no question. It's going to hurt rural communities. But this is a strong base of Republican support. What's going on here, I guess, in your time, in the legislature as a candidate, as somebody active in politics and government, that has changed things where, you know, working people who could potentially be hurt by these measures. I mean, again, Iowa's become a red state just in the last 10 years. It's become a red state. What do you see going on here politically? And what do the Democrats have to do differently, Josh, to appeal back to these working class voters who, you know, again, you're intimately aware of in your district?
There's a variety of reasons for this, and some of which us as the Democrat Party, it's our fault, truthfully, is I think that we have gotten away from being genuine supporters of the working class, of the middle class, of fighting for people's health care, for people's jobs, for people's housing. For, you know, these are the things that I have run on: protecting our public schools, raising the minimum wage. These are the things that ultimately matter. Yes, you're right that Iowa over the last 12 years, we have shifted more to the red than any other state. We're a state that voted twice for Obama, now three times for Trump. And some of that is the modern divide really has become urban versus rural, and we are a rural state, and the rural areas have become more red, and the urban areas have become more blue. This certainly has been exacerbated by the Trump effect and his what I would consider faux populism. I think he masquerades as a populist, but if you look at any of his policies, and certainly the Trump tax cuts are a great example, where 85% of the benefits are going to the 1%. But he's preaching a false narrative and message that people ultimately are ended up voting against their own self-interest. Some of that is also this national narrative, the incredibly deleterious effects of social media and 24-hour news networks, which has, you know, really created this echo chamber and really pushed us even further. I think they have done a good job of focusing on culture war issues and divisive issues, you know, myriad of those that you can talk about, which I think are largely irrelevant. I mean, what's relevant is 100% of the people, we need jobs, we need employment. And we all need healthcare. We need schools that function. We need infrastructure. And that's what we need to be focusing on as a party. And I think that the Democrats, it oftentimes, far too often, became too much of a corporate version of themselves. And did. We lost touch to a large degree with the middle class and with the average worker. And this is what I'm trying to bring back. This has been my message from the beginning, is the way back forward, and not only to win elections, but to bring this country back to the way it needs to be, is enough with the culture war and the divisive issues. Let's talk about the things that really matter, and that's protecting the middle class. It's being eroded. And let's get back to economic populism, or like, you know, my political hero, Tom Harkin, used to call it prairie populism. That's the way back.
You mentioned, you know, what we're talking about here when we mention working class, the working definition in politics is those without college degrees. And you mentioned that the big divide, that's our big divide here. It seems to me a lot of this comes back to education. And I know it's fashionable right now to criticize universities and all that, but how do you see the efforts in Iowa, Josh, as far as strengthening the educational system? I know there's been a movement to homeschooling, private schools. What's your view on all that?
You can just follow the data. It's pretty clear what's happening to Iowa's education system. It was, you know, I was very, very fortunate that when I was in elementary school, Iowa, we were still number one in public education. And it was genuinely a point of personal pride to all Iowans to be number one in that, in public education. I am a firm believer that the single greatest metric for success, for future success in life, is access to quality education. And I am a big believer that you should not have to win the genetic lottery to have access to quality education. That should be for every single kid, regardless of if they grew up in a poor family or poor community, regardless of what their property tax situation is in their community, that they have access to the greatest levels of education. And honestly, public education, that was an American ideal. That was initially began by John Adams. You know, I've heard it said, oh, that's a communist idea. No, this way precedes Marx or anything like that. This is an American ideal because our founding fathers understood that you needed an educated electorate for democracy to ultimately function. And it's to me, it's sad that now in Iowa, we have fallen all the way from number one to the mid-20s. And depending on some metrics that you go with, when you're looking at math and science, you're looking at us being number 34. A lot of this is where we put our priorities and where we put our funding. And when we're in a state now where we are spending $1,400 less than the national average per pupil, these are the results you're going to get. It also, in our state, we voted this year to increase SSA, supplemental aid to our schools, by 2%. That does not even keep up with inflation. Meanwhile, we ended up giving an additional 44% increase, basically a blank check, to private schools. I am fundamentally against it, and we need to put our priorities as our children and the next generation, and then the results will come. What I've said is, let's make Iowa great. Let's make Iowa great number one again in public education.
I only have about a minute left, and this is unfair of me to do because it's a complicated topic, but it looks like Iowa, and I mentioned this to Speaker Grassley last week, it looks like leaders are wanting to reach out and maybe devise some type of property tax reform. I think everybody agrees property taxes are a terrible way to fund schools. I just got my bill, and I'm not going to share with what it was, but I'm not very happy. In 2 minutes, Josh, what's your thoughts? How do we best reform property taxes?
It is complicated. We really need to rebuild the ship. It shouldn't certainly be something that we do overnight. I can tell you this, that as a legislator in my community, I'm almost feel the most amount of emails from this, of people complaining about their property taxes, how much they're going up, how much the assessments are going up. I know that in particular, we really need to do something to protect those that are on fixed incomes and Social Security. We can't have a situation where we are forcing people out of their homes because of the property tax burden. And additionally, we have to do something on affordable housing. Housing is really the key to the American dream. It's the way to transfer wealth from one generation to the next. And we're looking at a situation where homeownership is becoming more and more difficult. And a lot of that is because of this huge influence of private equity. Last year, 44% of the homes that were purchased in Iowa were by private equity. We've got to get that out of there. And we've got to ensure that home ownership is possible to every single person in the middle class, including the younger generation.
Josh Turek has been my guest today on Heartland Politics. He's a second-term state legislator from the 20th District out in Council Bluffs on the southwest part of the state. I want to thank him. Thank you for being my guest today. It was a very interesting conversation. And as listeners can tell, he's very passionate about these issues, and I think you're going to be hearing more about him in the future. Thank you again, Josh, and hope to have you back some point.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.